Hey, welcome back to episode 401 of the Protectors Podcast. 401, brother.
That's huge, bro. Who was 400? Because I feel like you got to be like celebratory having for
Brad Taylor,
nice
former Delta Force, that's author huge. Of the Pike Logan series.
I've never interviewed him, but I was going to say awesome, when I had Brad Thor on, he talked about Brad Taylor.
Everybody talks about Brad Taylor. 16-time New York Times bestseller. I think 16, somewhere around there. I mean, after one, don't you? It's going to lose count.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, Brad Thor talked about that too, because he was saying how I think the last book was not number one; it was number two, and he's like, "But I always have the title of like number one New York Times." So, but yeah, he mentioned him because he was saying that I think he helped Brad Taylor out along the way at some point.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And Brad did. Thor was like, "I could have been like, hey, like don't I have I what would the word be?" It would just be him under Brad T. I don't know what word I'm looking for, but either way, he's very into like promoting things that he likes. Like the first time I ever heard the name Jack Carr was from Brad Thor. He's not someone who has this mindset of like, it's just me and fuck everyone else. He's not like that.
No, that's what's cool about a lot of those authors nowadays. I really don't know anybody that really doesn't promote everybody else. There's so many books to read. Like you can knock out one of those thriller books in a few days. So you got to go on to the next. So that's why it's great to have a lot of good series out there.
Yeah, I read mostly nonfiction. Right now I'm reading this book called Aberration in the Heartland of the Real, and it's about like Tim McVeigh, and it's about some of the more conspiracy-minded stuff, because it's interesting because I don't know your take on all of this, but I was someone who always believed like the official story. I've read a lot about the Oklahoma City bombing. I've seen the conspiracy videos and stuff. And this book kept coming up, and it was like, you have to read it. It's by this woman, Wendy Painting, and she's a PhD. It's not like crazy stuff. She cites all the works of what she read. And
yeah,
it's a very thick book, but very interesting. So that's what I'm reading right now.
I love those kind of books. I like, because you can only get so much from like YouTube videos and stuff, but when you actually read something, it's cool.
If it's well done and like they really have all the same way with your books, when they really have everything cited, because it's the same with your book. When people hear about human trafficking and what's going on, a lot of people are going to say, this is too crazy to be true. But then when they see that you actually have the sources, your experience, people could open their mind a little bit more.
Too crazy to be true. Isn't that awesome? I'm writing that down. I'm going to put that in my next book. There's so much out there. Like nowadays with the advent of social media, there is so much that is too crazy to be true. And that's one of the reasons I think you and I both got into this podcast realm, is so we could have conversations just like this, where we could talk about these things where people are like, well, I can't believe that. Well, hey, how about I want to hear from this person's mouth themselves? We all know that in a real, like I used to do the media all the time, and you become like a 3 to 5 minute soundbite. But with podcasts, you get to bring out a story. You could do the long form, or like, you know, mostly what I do is like 30, 40 minutes and talk about, bring information out there. But also, what's the key word? Entertainment. You're also entertaining your audience. And Ian, you've been into the podcast world for a while. And, you know, I probably should give it a quick intro to Ian. Ian is, you are one of the co-hosts, one of the duo of the Battle Line podcast, one of the best podcasts out there. I believe you guys are top 0.5 or 1%, or you're one of the bigger podcasts out there in the world, part of this podcast community of over 2.4 million podcasts. But you're one of the really good ones out there. But the thing is, you do the conversation one, and you do your research, and you have the conversations. But you've been doing this for a while. You've been in this media spectrum for a while, not just in the podcast world, but also with Sirius and a bunch of other things. So why don't you give the audience a quick overview of who is Ian Scott?
Yeah, I mean, there'd be a lot to get into. I think like if I was to start from the very beginning, when I went to college, I didn't have any direction of where I wanted to go at all. I went to Temple University for 1 year in Philadelphia. They didn't really have a real radio station set up. They had a group together that was discussing a future radio station for the college, but they didn't really have anything. And then I went to Hofstra University. I transferred over there, moved back home with my parents on Long Island. And like WRHU, they ran that station like a real station, and it was a respected station. I mean, as of right now, it's the flagship station of the New York Islanders. So they take it extremely serious. It's not just a college station with a small signal where you're broadcasting to a few hundred people. Like, huge parts of Long Island hear that station. So I started doing that. And actually, at the time, I was also working at Tower Records. And I remember, honestly, customers would come in and I'd have conversations about music. And all the time, and I don't say it to brag, it's just what would happen. They'd go, "You have a really great voice. You should be working in radio." And I was just doing it as a recreational thing. I didn't have any direction for where I really wanted to go. But once you start hearing it more and more, and not just from like family members and friends, you're like, okay, maybe there's something to this. I started out doing a metal show late nights called The Aggressive Edge.
Hold on, let's backtrack. Tower Records, man. Is this the Tower Records?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like everybody at some point worked at Tower Records, like so many people that you read about. Mm-hmm. I was just reading about Chino Moreno from the Deftones. He apparently worked at a Tower Records. And yeah, it was Tower Records, Carl Place, infamous. And as of, I think, probably around 2009, or, you know, and I was there in its last days, they're no longer. I mean, there's like an online presence, but there's a documentary on Tower Records. I haven't seen it yet, though.
Oh, there's nothing like going into, you know, as someone who just hit the old 5-0, nothing like walking into a record store, man. And then later on, you know, you're flipping through the CD stands. Well, first the cassettes and then the CDs. And now it's like, it's all online, man. But, you know.
Yeah, but do you have any good ones by you still?
No.
Okay, because I will say like, so my studio is here in Connecticut, but my parents are on Long Island. I'm on Long Island very regularly, kind of split time between the two. Carl Place, there's a place called Mr. Cheapo there, and it has been there since before I was born, and it is still standing, and it is amazing. It's like a still, so there still are those places, and you go to Mr. Cheapo and Carl Place, you're very often not the only person there. They still do good business, and I think a lot of it has to do with people are collecting vinyl now, so it still exists. It's just, it's not what it was.
It all comes down to the airwaves. You're always putting that voice all over the airwaves. You know, first in person, you know, you're getting talking to people and they're buying records and kind of cheesy and cliche, but then you're going on to the recording in studio and getting your voice out there. And then the podcasts. How did you get into the podcast realm? And before we get into that, I want to tell people that this is a follow-up to a skill set article I just wrote about how to jump into podcasting. And Ian was gracious enough to, you know, provide some comment along with some other awesome podcasters out there. But I really wanted to have this conversation today for you, the audience, who are thinking about getting into podcasting and thinking about using your voice, whether it's a monologue or whether you're going to do an interview based like Ian and I both do, and you want to really get into this world. So I want to find out, well, like backtrack to when Ian first got into the podcast world and kind of some of the hiccups and some of the positives of it.
Yeah, I'm going to go back a little bit further where I was because I think it'll be a good transition to how from radio I got to podcasting. But so I was doing The Aggressive Edge, as I was saying, at a Hofstra University metal show. And people were actually calling in, and I was getting, every now and again, I was getting fan mail and stuff. So I was like, okay, this could actually become something. And I don't know if any of those people still listen to what I do now, but like they were diehard for what I was doing at the time. So I was doing the morning show there at Hofstra, and this led to an internship at Fangoria Radio on Sirius XM, where I worked with Dee Snider, legendary Dee Snider, and Debbie Rochon. And Debbie Rochon is now the voice of the intro for Battle Line Podcast. And I use her voice for things all the time because she's great. And she was, you know, where I started. So yeah, I did that. That led to being an engineer at Sirius XM. I was a fan of Andrew Wilkow's show, and I hoped to work with him one day. Got to meet him, got to even fill in for him a few times. But I, to give you an idea of where podcasting started for me, I would say that all the stuff I was doing at Hofstra, once that all ended and I was working at Sirius XM really as an engineer and producer, there were...
You know what? What is an engineer? You know, because a lot of times audience, because to me, when I think engineer, sure. I think technical guy, I went to engineering school. But what is an engineer?
Yeah, operating the mixing board and putting all the spots that you hear into radio shows and going to break and all that stuff that's done by the computer, but you need someone behind the board. And it is very important. I was a few minutes late today, and also you had stuff to do, but I really learned being on time because of that, because there are points where, for example, Andrew would be doing something in the office and he'd be, let's say, 30 seconds late. If there's no one behind that soundboard, it's pure silence, which you can't have, especially if you're working in terrestrial. You could literally get fined for that. We were working on Sirius XM, but it does alert someone in a control room with all the shows that are on Sirius. And it's like, hey, there's nothing going on there over the airwaves. You got to put some type of emergency message on the air, that type of thing. So, yeah, you really learn to be on time for things because you have to have something running if the host isn't there. So, yeah, I'm doing all those things and letting them know, hey, we got to go to break at this time. Also doing call screening. So all the behind the scenes stuff. Got to fill in for Andrew a few times, became Senator Bill Bradley's associate producer. But the podcasting thing happened because a few years had passed between me being on air at Hofstra University to me being this behind the scenes guy at Sirius XM. And I always think of myself as a radio host, but at the same time, if you haven't been on air, let's say in 2 years, which it probably was, are you really still a radio host? You're not really doing anything. And that's when the Joe Rogan Experience started to blow up and all these other big shows, Mark Maron, and all that stuff. And I figured, yeah, if no one is hiring me, which I was trying to do to be an on-air personality, I have to kind of do this on my own. And I have access to all these studios that I could use, even though I'm not supposed to use them for this type of thing, but I was, can't do anything now. I think statute of limitations, not that it's illegal, but it wasn't supposed to be used for your own personal stuff. But that's what I did. I started my own podcast and I was regularly in touch with Brandon Webb, Navy SEAL, because he was on Andrew Wilkow's show. And I was like, man, this would be a cool first interview to do. And I really didn't know anything about the Navy SEALs or special operations. So he was the first interview I did on just my own podcast. It went well and he brought me on board with SOFREP. And yeah, that led to other things. That led to what I'm doing now with like In the Wild, as you see back there, if you're watching on video. I narrate and write for that podcast and various other podcasts on the narrative.fm network of shows. And then in 2019, Chris and I started Battleline Podcast and still doing all that stuff and hopefully more in the future.
How did you get linked up with Chris?
So Chris is another guy I met at Sirius XM when the I was working for SOFREP at the time and also working for Sirius. And I knew all about the Benghazi attack. I actually met Glenn Doherty really briefly at Sirius XM because he was a friend of Brandon Webb and he came in with him, like shook hands with the guy. I didn't know him well or anything, but probably a couple months after that is when I heard that he died in the Benghazi attack. So I followed the Benghazi attack very closely. And the guys from 13 Hours came in to do an interview with Andrew Wilkow for the Wilkow Majority. And it was Chris and it was one of the other guys. And I honestly don't remember who. It was either Oz or Tig, but I don't remember. But Chris stood out. He was just a cool guy. He ended up becoming a regular on the show. Me and him stayed in touch. And our good friend who I worked with at SOFREP and just probably like the last great, you know, like my best friends are people that I go back to elementary school and stuff with. You don't usually like make a best friend later on in life, but Drew Dwyer was totally, and actually I'm looking here because this is from my birthday at Benihana. That guy right there is Drew Dwyer. There's me right there from, Benihana. So he was like, he became a really great friend of mine, not just a coworker. And in 2019, Drew Dwyer died and I was the first person to hear it. Actually, one of the police officers knew me, who was contacted, Ben from the NYPD, who we call Ben YPD. But even though this happened in Connecticut, but I guess he was contacted somehow. And Ben called me and it was pretty matter of fact about it, kind of like a cop is. He just called me and I just remember him going, hey, I got to talk to you. Drew's dead. And I'm like, Drew Dwyer? Yeah. And he's like, I'm trying to get in touch with his wife. I figured you might have her number because I've slept over Drew's house, knew him very well, spent New Year's Eve with him. And of course I did. So I gave him the number. And one of the first person I thought to contact was Chris, because Chris had served as a contractor with Drew. And I told him, yeah, what happened, and kind of shocked to both of us. And then the idea, oh, and I told him, I was like, hey, by the way, I'm no longer working at SoftRep. Just figured I'd tell you. I'm doing other things. I'm training to be a personal trainer, which I am now. I have that up there too, above the battle.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, that was yeah, you look over there.
You know, for the listening audience, you know, as we're doing this, Ian's like flexing, and she's like, hey, look at that certificate over there. Hey, Helen, when did you work for Andrew?
Oh, it was a long time, man. From, you know what? It's probably, if I looked at my LinkedIn, I could get a better idea, because everything.
No, because I did a show like 3 or 4 times, together. Like back
how long
in
ago?
2018, 19.
All right. So that might be, yeah, that's after I left, because I worked at Sirius from 2008 to 2017. I knew Andrew from pretty much the whole time I was working there. I met him, but then I worked with him. If I had to guess, I'm going to say like 2011 to 2017. Might be off by a little bit, but something like that. But yeah, so when I told Chris what had happened and that I was no longer at SoftRep and I was doing these other things, he said to me, hey, why don't we just start a podcast?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it came to be. He's very like, he has to commit to something and has to really think about it. He likes to speak with his wife about this stuff. So it was a few months before he was like, all right, I'm in. But he has speaking engagement in New Jersey and Atlantic City. He does a lot of speaking engagements for people who don't know. But like, I met up with him. We discussed the idea. And then November 2019, we launched.
Now, when you think, okay, let's go from the beginning with this. You and Chris get together and you're going to launch a brand spanking new podcast. Chris obviously doesn't have the background with the audio in the mic and all that. I mean, we're just assuming. We're making assumptions here. But you do. And you're both going to be doing this remote at the first time, right?
No, our first episode was actually in studio.
Well, that helps.
The only times we've been in studio.
Well, there you go. So you're going to – do you rent a studio? Or
yeah,
build a
and that's
studio?
And that's kind of what I wrote about in the article for Skillset. Yeah. I went to Gotham Podcast Studio in New York City. Did my research about like what studios we could rent out.
What are you looking for? And let's get into the really like the down and dirty about this. Let's like, okay, so when you want to start a podcast, you have a few different options. You can go into your Jeep or your car and you're sitting there and hope the sound sounds good and you're doing it on your phone. You could do like I do. I have a camera, I have a mic, and I'm in a kind of a soundproof little room here. Or you could rent a studio. You could do it in a closet, basement, wherever. But the main gist of it is sound. So is that the first thing you're looking for? Is what you have a lot of luxury when you rent a studio, but not everybody has that. And what are we looking at as far as cost? So let's say you got money, you want to go rent the studio. How much are we looking at, and what are we looking for?
Yeah, I mean, it fluctuates. And also, we just did audio at that time. And I feel like so many more people are doing video now. And it's going to cost significantly less if you're just doing audio. You'd have to look at the actual websites. You know, like, I'm actually renting a studio coming up next month. If you heard about this story of, and I'm going to get back to what we're talking about, but this story about George Santos and the veteran who he took $3,000 allegedly from a charity. I have to say allegedly. So I spoke to the veteran. We're going to do something in studio. So I have a studio session coming up soon in New York City. But like, I'm looking at the website right now, and you know, for example, it says here 1 hour, $75. But then if you want someone to engineer the whole session, that's an extra $55 on here. One angle camera, an extra $50 on there. So, you know, it's not a huge expense, but I know if you're starting from square one, you don't want to be like in the red. Yeah, you might want to just do it on your own, but there definitely are benefits because you know that everything is going to be recorded professionally.
Now,
you know that you have people with
when you go into, that's the one thing I really want to talk about too, because I've never rented a studio. I've always either done it on my own and upgraded my own equipment. But when you go into a studio, let's walk through that whole thing. So you reserve a studio, you go in there. Do you have to bring thumb drives? Are they going to email you the audio? Who's uploading the audio? Are they doing the engineering? Or is this just kind of one of those things where like, it's like a la carte where you pick what you need?
Yeah, they'll do all of that for you in terms of sending over the session. The only reason you might want to add an engineer being there the whole time is if you have specific things going on during the podcast. But for the most part, they'll drop in and out because there's different rooms in there. But they'll hit the record button and make sure everything is set up. If you have a camera, audio levels, all that stuff. And the reason we started, for one, I wanted to be in studio for the first episode. I thought it would be cool. But I remember I was thinking, who could we get on as a first guest? And the great thing about being in New York City or any major city is, like, there's stuff going on. And I saw that there was a UFC event happening the week that we wanted to do this. So I said, we should get someone on from the UFC. That would be a really cool first guest in studio. And Chris said, I know Andre Arlovsky. He's fighting.
Yeah.
So we got Andre Arlovsky in studio and had a great show. So I think the luxury of that is also, I mean, I just did an interview yesterday with Max Mullen, and it was a great interview. But, and you know this, if someone's connection is not the greatest, both us right now, it's really smooth. But a lot of the times people live in places where their Wi-Fi is acting up or just not the best internet connection, and there's the delay, and you're stepping over each other because things are just not synced up properly. Like, you just don't have to worry about that stuff. I personally love doing in studio. I think it's just a totally different experience than this. It's definitely what I prefer. And I don't like this whole metaverse, everything is online world, even though I live in it just like everyone else.
I actually do like, I've been a guest in studio and I love it, man.
Yeah.
I love being in there. I like having a talk with people. I like conversation. I like being able to do that stuff. So
it's more personal, man. And then it can lead to, like, stuff after the interview. You know, there's so many times where after an interview with Andrew Wilkow, we then went over to, if it was higher end, like Del Frisco downstairs, or sometimes just walked across the street to Chick-fil-A with some guest and, like, hung out and got to know these people. And that's how we became friends. I mean, all these people I met, whether it was Chris or Jack Murphy, like, it was all people I met in studio and you became friendly with. I don't think it's the same meeting people via Zoom.
No, it's not. But, you know, like we said before, a lot of times we don't have the opportunity to be in the same locations. Like, you and I are both fortunate. I'm right near D.C., so if I do need to get a studio, I can. But before we even start a podcast, we should really be like, okay, what are we going to podcast about? Now, me personally, and I'm sure the same thing is with you, you like to talk to interesting people. You like to have those conversations, but you can also do monologues. And when I say monologue, a lot of times people are like, what is that? That's where you sit and you, not really a rant, but you could talk about a topic, but you're the one, you're the eye. And it is really tough to kind of sit and do a monologue for any length of time.
I can't
and,
do it.
Yeah. But even then, so you're, let's say you do a monologue or an interview based, find out what your niche is and niche it down. Cause we both know there's 2.something million podcasts out there and you want to have a good topic that people are going to want to go back to. They're going to want to listen to you over and over again if you have something that they want.
Yeah, and that's the difference between broadcasting and podcasting. You could be extremely specific. And actually, the best example I could give of that, put this back on, my slipper's falling off here. It was comfortable. The best example I could give of that is I remember there was this podcast that blew up overnight. And it was called Britney's Grand. It was a podcast about Britney Spears Instagram. But this podcast led to the whole, like, Free Britney movement and what's going on with her social media. What is this conservatorship? And that would never be a radio show in a major city. It's way too specific. Not enough people are going to care. But this thing got picked up everywhere. And yeah, some of the biggest podcasts are extremely, extremely specific. I think what, like, I do is pretty specific, but at the same point, I branch out when I think there's a little tie-in we could have here or there. And some of those episodes have been huge. I mean, the biggest episode I've ever done, actually, of any podcast, was the recent interview with John Dolmayan from System of a Down. And, like, he's not a veteran. He's not military law enforcement, which is, like, what we cover the most. But he's a supporter of that stuff. And it was like, there's a lot of military guys who listen to System of a Down overseas. It was like, there's definitely a tie in here. And he revealed a lot of stuff in that interview that I didn't expect him to. And this thing made headlines everywhere, like internationally. So that was really cool. So I think it's important to have your niche, but you can branch out a little bit from that when you have a great opportunity. And I'll point out, the the disadvantage doing the monologue type thing is unless you are a personality that is known, has like a giant following or something, it's really hard to catch on that way. So that's why I always do tell people, book some high level guests and don't be afraid to, because everybody has to start somewhere. But I have friends who have sports podcasts, and to me, it's like, I got a chance to become friends with umpire Joe West. And like a guy like that, I'm like, see if you can get him on your podcast. I think you can. And that could lead to other things. That could lead to getting other professional athletes on, or people who work in professional sports. And that's what people want to hear. You have to like reel them in somehow. And if you don't have the name, it's just hard to do.
And be sincere. When you're looking for guests, don't blanket. Don't be like, hey, you know what? Send out a generic email. Niche down. Why do you like them? Why do you want them on a show? What are you going to talk about? Is it going to be political? Is it going to be conservative? Is it going to be liberal? Or are you guys going to be jumping all over the place? But they're going to want to know. And if they don't want to know, their publicist needs to know. A lot of times they're going to want to know about numbers, but say, hey, you know what? I may not have the numbers now, but we do have a specific audience, and it's like a ripple effect with this. So you're not, when you're first starting out, don't hesitate to reach out to other people, and don't hesitate to reach out to other podcasts to self-promote yourself.
And, by the way, you have to really sell yourself and believe in what you're doing. You know, like when I started personal training, I didn't tell my first client, you're the first person I'm ever working with. I'm completely inexperienced, because that would make them feel uncomfortable. They wouldn't, you know, and so I wouldn't, don't email people and downplay what you do and say, I'm just starting out. No one's ever heard of me, but hopefully you come on. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to believe in what you're doing. Hey, we're going to build this great audience. List the positives of what you have going on. Some of the contacts you have. Hey, I thought you would be a perfect first guest for this show. Not, I can't get anyone, you know, so you really have to, it's not the maybe like fake it till you make it thing, but it's just really selling your show and why it would be great for this person to come on. Because I think you have a lot of people go, well, I can't get anybody on. I'm nobody. And you'd be surprised, man. A lot of people love doing interviews and getting their name out there. And you never know which one's going to blow up. Like I said, the John Dolmayan one I did from System of a Down. He's appeared on a ton of rock podcasts that didn't get that amount of traction. But he came on ours, which may not have been as big as some of the other shows he did. But because he said interesting things, it got picked up.
And prepare. You know, when you're going to have a guest like that, I'm prepared. I usually take notes. Like today, I wanted to hit on certain things at the end, so I wrote down a list. And as I'm writing, as we're talking, I'm writing. I'm like, okay, he said this. I want to follow up on that. Treat this like it's a job. Don't treat it like, hey, you know what? I shouldn't say treat it like a job, because it's fun. But the thing is, you have to be professional and you have to be prepared. You know, that's one thing about, you know, having the background that I have is like, I kind of always put down plan things ahead of time. And when it comes to like operations and stuff like that. So I treat a lot of these interviews like them. Sometimes I want to have like a regular conversation, but sometimes like this one, I want the audience to really learn the ins and outs of kind of like the podcasting world. So write an outline of what you want to do. Review your guests before they come on. Look in, are they in the news? Check their website out. If they have a book, they're going to want to know whether, a lot of times they're going to want to know, did you read the book? They're going to tell if you can read the book. Don't try to fake like you read someone's book and you haven't. You're not, because they will call you on it. Oh, so you didn't read the book. And that's not,
I think, as long as, but I also think as long as you like skim through, because I have so many books here, like, have I read them all cover to cover? Being genuine, no. But I'll at least review it and get an idea. Mm-hmm. And you know, not even to call out people that I've worked with, but people I have worked with who have really big names. A lot of them just don't have the time to read a full book, but before they go on air, they'll read some pages, they'll get an idea of what it's about, and you know, get some specific questions. So
yeah, work through it. Get some solid questions and don't just do the generic questions.
Sure.
A lot of times, if you're speaking to someone, a lot of people don't know who they are. Like your Wi-Fi name,
that was on Jason's end.
You know, and I'm not going to edit this. I'm going to leave that in there, because this is one thing I want to show people too, is like, always expect when you're recording at home, like my Alexa just started telling me that I'm not connected to the system, but you're going to have sound. You're going to have like dogs barking. You're going to have kids coming in. You're going to have this. You're going to have that. But it's going to happen. And you could edit this out later on. And we'll get into the editing process later on. But stuff like that happens. Don't let it throw you for a loop.
Yeah, and it depends what type of show you're doing too. Because, right, like In the Wilds is a scripted, narrated show of written stuff. It has to sound kind of pristine. But if you're doing an off-the-cuff show, I mean, you think of like Joe Rogan, right? Things can go wrong and they'll just leave it in there and make a joke out of it. And if you have that ability, you can just leave it in there and not edit. You get to decide. That's the cool thing, is the creative control. Is this a show that I want to sound completely perfect? Is it like NPR format where they would never let a mistake fall in there? Or is it a little bit more just like off the cuff people hanging out and discussing something? But it should never, there should always be like a method to the madness. And I think people assume a show like Howard Stern, they're like, oh, he just comes in there and just does whatever he wants. And that's not the reality.
No, not at all. You know, we talked about starting the podcast and getting into it. Equipment is one thing. So we're just kind of really, I mean, when you get to a studio, you're going to have all the equipment you're going to need. You're going to need headset, mic, computer, download. But let's talk about the home studio. Right now I have a camera. I used to use I have a Sony A6400. I'm using an Alienware computer. I have a Shure USB mic, and I have a $20 headset or earpiece that I got off of Amazon. The thing is, the equipment's the same. It's a camera, a computer, a mic, and a headset. So, I mean, I'm looking at Ian. He's got the same thing. So let's talk about the equipment you have up right now.
Yeah, this is a Rode microphone. I don't even remember the model off the top of my head. Might say somewhere. But yeah, and then the stand over here. I have this Scarlett, what is it called again? The Scarlett Solo. Yeah, the preamp that you plug it into. But if you're just getting started, you probably just use a USB mic. I have right over here. This is a Rode USB mic, and this is a lot easier. As you know, less equipment needed for that type of thing. You know, I have like a Logi high resolution camera. So yeah, I mean, if you're just getting started, the USB mic's pretty solid, and Rode makes good stuff, and Shure makes good stuff, and it won't cost you that much. At the same time, I do hear that a lot of used stuff is now on eBay for the past year or so, because everyone started a podcast in 2020. And they didn't stay consistent with it, because the same thing you're talking about, they figured, oh, this is just a fun thing. They don't look at it as a job. And in order to be successful, people do want to hear a consistent product every week and something new. And you got to be prepared. And if you're just putting out podcasts every couple months and you don't have an idea what you want to talk about, it's not going to go anywhere.
No, because in the end of the day, it's informational and it's entertainment. That's why sound is very key. And the other thing, too, is also you have to do consistency. Once you get past 5 or 6 episodes, you're in it. But a lot of people quit right around episode 4 or 5 because they're like, man, I'm putting a lot of work in. I'm only getting like 10 listeners. But what comes out of listeners, you and I are both doing it. Like right now, I want everybody to go check out the Battle Line podcast. And I would like Ian to do the same with me. It's called cross promotion. You have to be your own marketing professional. Anybody that's in it really, and we're talking about basic everyday people. We're not talking about someone who's got like a company that's got thousands of dollars to throw off marketing. You have to sell this show. You have to. You have to get out there. You have to do social media. You have to get it out there. Friends, families, everybody else is going to support you, but you need to get past the friends and family.
Yeah, and I think that's getting great guests on that people want to hear and just doing a consistent show.
You know, that comes down to like uploading. So you started the podcast, you recorded that first episode, artwork, your cover, your name. Let me talk about names real quick. The Protectors Podcast. When I first came up with my name, it had to be with my niche, but I also Googled it. I wanted a trademark. I made sure nobody trademarked it. And then I found my name I wanted. I thought it kind of was catchy and I thought it was good. Before you publish a name and before you publish your podcast, make sure there's not another podcast out there. Because if anybody's been following me for a while, they know that I finally had my name. It's a registered trademark now. I got the big old R behind it. because another podcast, as I'm 200 and something episodes in, decides to start the Protectors podcast. So as soon as you get your name, find your name, make sure nobody else has your name, and then go with it.
Yeah, there's apparently other Battleline podcasts, and people have started shows that sound extremely similar. Well, I won't say who, but we're the biggest one, I think, called Battleline. I think Chris trademarked it, but Battleline Tactical, he started, and it's a trademark. I do think it'd be great if you have a name that no one else has. There are some, like I said, if you look up Battleline, we're like the first one that'll come up, though.
Well, the other thing, too, is like, don't start almost the same exact podcast, because that's what happened with me. Like, law enforcement and support, I'm like, oh, my gosh. But, you know, I use for artwork and stuff. I do the artwork myself. You can go out and hire someone else to do your artwork with you. But you're going to draw in. This all comes down to marketing. So don't think about it as like, okay, you're going to put this audio file out there and everybody in the world is going to go and find it. Make sure you have a really cool, you know, your topic, you're covered. When you're uploading it, people know what to find. I'm using Buzzsprout as my upload, and that uploads me to all the different podcast platforms. I mean, I have to go and do manually add them, but like Apple, Spotify, Podbean, all the other, well, everywhere. I always say every major podcast platform. What are you guys using for your?
We were using SoundCloud, and then Dylan, who I work for really within the wild, he told me to move it over to Simplecast. So that's where we're at right now. I say, well, a lot of people are using that, what is it called? Speaker something? You know what I'm talking about? Or no? Oh, no. Is it Megaphone? Something like that. There's one that a lot of people are using that seems to be good. And then you can put ads in. And
yeah, there's so many different. Just one thing I would just say, just do your research on it.
Yeah, Megaphone is like one of the big ones right now.
So once you get that file up there and the audio up there, don't worry about the reviews. The reviews will come.
People to leave reviews.
Tell your friends and family. Tell them, hey, look, it doesn't cost you anything. That just take 2 seconds and go and review something. What else are we missing here? So the file's up there. You recorded it. You're preparing for it. What am I missing?
I don't know. I was going to say with the graphic, there's so many great people on Fiverr. Yeah. If you guys aren't familiar, Fiverr.com. It's freelancers and great graphic designers. Yeah, they'll do stuff for a really affordable price. Our logo is done by my friend in Australia, who's amazing, Aaron Lauder. He does an incredible job. I use him for anything graphic design. And then if you're getting an intro done, there's people on Fiverr for that who can make an intro for you. There's voice actors on there. I'm on there myself. All of that is really important. I don't know what else to include there. I think, as you said, consistency is important. We both spoke about separating yourself from other competition, getting great guests on. And I think we covered all that. And I think your article did a great job covering all of that stuff. And yeah, if you're just getting started and you do want to rent a studio, put that money aside and you're investing in yourself.
Yeah, everybody, check out that article on Skillset, too, and make sure you head over to Battleline. But I'm going to ask my final question for Ian is,
sure,
if you could go back, what is one piece of advice that you would give yourself about podcasting?
About what advice would I give myself? Man, it's just, it's a really tough question. Because I think a lot of it I have followed, you know, strangely enough, in terms of like, being specific with your topics and that type of thing. I guess if I could go back in time, though, I would tell myself, like, this is going to be a really big industry. So really put your heart into it. Because when I first started out, there weren't podcasts getting $100 million contracts. And that seemed completely unknown at the time and unheard of. So I just thought of it, I think, as, oh, this is a side gig and radio is my main gig. But now this is kind of my main gig, and it's really big, and it has the capability of becoming even bigger. So take it really seriously.
And definitely get past 4 or 5 episodes. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like anything else, like the gym, right? Any of that stuff. It's getting started is always the hardest part.
Absolutely, brother. Well, Ian, I appreciate you coming on the show, the Protectors podcast. Make sure you check out Battleline. But Ian, you're also doing a whole bunch of different things. I'm going to drop some links. Make sure you're following Ian on the IG and all the other good places. And
yeah, I'm personally just on Twitter, but Battleline is on everything.
Yeah, Twitter, man. Twitter's where it's at for you, brother.
Yeah, it's the only one I use. I'm not big on social media, so...